The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's The Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and this is the number one listened to program in the United States for independent, progressive-minded individuals who are looking for real solutions to many of our problems. Today, we're going to cover some things that I think will make a big difference. We're going to look at how the banks really manipulated the system. I discussed this in depth, and now new documents have come out to show that, oh, that was 100% on the bullseye, but what does it mean today? What can we do about it? Also, a commentary from Tom Englehart from Truth, ThomasDispatch.com, Sleepwalking into the Imperial Dark. Also, some countries are now saying no to genetically engineered food. That's good. And one of the important reports that we're not hearing about, and that is water. Water really going to be a problem, and we'll bring you up to date on why you should not be moving to certain states because of their water problems. That's in addition to the record-breaking number of tornadoes, especially in Arkansas and Tennessee and Kentucky and Oklahoma, flooding in Missouri and Kansas and Indiana, and all the other problems we're having. Now, I'm just confirming an analysis also on solar flares and electromagnetic pulses and what this could do to people living on the grid. And this comes from NASA. Once I confirm this, I'll share that information with you and explain why in the near future, let's say the next 2 years, if at all possible, you should start to live off the grid, meaning off the electrical grid. So using solar or wind, yeah. But geothermal's fine. But if you're 100% attached to cell phones and just standard electricity, the internet, we get hit with one of these, you could have a lot of problems. I'll tell you more on that. Let's begin, however, with the latest on health and healing. I grew up, we had watermelon. Loved watermelon. I love watermelon today. It's my favorite fruit. But I always had heard from the people in the country that watermelon was good for the kidneys and it was a good blood cleaner. Now, mind you, these people had no background in science, but today they would be shown to be absolutely correct. In fact, the American Journal of Hypertension just published an article done by food scientists at Florida State University showing that watermelon has specific chemicals in it, including what is called L-citrulline, C-I-T-R-U-L-L-I-N-E, and it has an enormous capacity to control your blood pressure. In fact, it worked equally as well as statin drugs in lowering blood pressure. That's right. So think of all the people you know who have high blood pressure, hypertension, and are taking statins, which I'm opposed to because of all their dangerous side effects. And also they've been overhyped. And here's something as simple as watermelon. Now, to really get the best benefits of watermelon in a real cleanse, what I do is I have people juice 3 times a day watermelon, put the juice of 2 lemons in it and 1 grapefruit, then spike it with some vitamin C. That's a real liver, kidney flush, helps bring down the blood pressure, and also helps thin the blood, which means you're less likely to have the aggregation of your red blood cells clumping, causing that clot, which can lead to a stroke or heart attack. So good news for those of you who've been eating watermelon and drinking its juices on a regular basis, because it does make a difference. But another fruit that you should be using, grapes. We have a new study from the University of Montpellier in the south of France that shows that grape polyphenols, meaning the chemicals that are in the grapes, either in grapes, grape juice, or in red wine, not just the antioxidants, but that can help prevent the buildup of fat in muscle tissue and favorably affect your body's response to insulin. And that's the hormone responsible for sugar and fat metabolism. And by the way, grape powder is the best of all. Now, you've heard me say that wherever possible, eat your fresh fruits and veggies. Good. Second, juice. Third, concentrate. But best of all, by a substantial magnitude, is the powders, because they're concentrated. And if you doubt me, try this. Take some broccoli. Let's say buy 5 pounds of broccoli and juice it, and see how much juice you get out of 5 pounds of broccoli. You can put all that into one glass of juice, and you still won't fill up the glass. Now imagine that 98% of that juice is water. Now wick off the water, and you're left with what amounts to about a half a teaspoon of all the power that was in the broccoli. Minus the fiber, what you're getting all the vitamins and minerals, phytonutrients, chlorophyll, antioxidants, and polyphenols, all in that little tiny bit of powder. Now they just found that the grape powder is 95% polyphenols, so it's really concentrated. So that's good. So we know that diets high in saturated fats are bad because it worsens insulin resistance, whereby cells do not respond adequately to the normal levels of insulin produced by the body, and a marker of the onset of diabetes. And this was published in the British Journal of Nutrition. So in this study, they found that those individuals who consumed grape polyphenols in a powdered form were able to, quote, in conclusion, the grape polyphenol extract modulated membrane phospholipid fatty acid composition and decreased muscle triglyceride content in high-fat, high-sugar diet-fed rats, unquote. What this means in lay language was that if you tend to be overweight, and most people are, and if you tend to have a higher blood sugar, and with American diet, most people certainly do, most people's fasting blood glucose level is not around 80, it's closer to 120 to 150, putting them at risk of diabetes, then the grape polyphenols can help anti-diabetic power and keep you less fat. So it's good news. And of course, eating the grapes are good too. Also, we now know that one way that we go from being pre-diabetic or pre-hypertension, and frequently they're one and the same, meaning they're not the same condition, but they're in the same person who is overweight. So when you're overweight, you're more likely to have high blood pressure and diabetes, and be at greater risk for cancer and depression and arthritis. You have all these other problems when you're overweight. But all of this is associated with reduced vitamin D levels. This is in Diabetes Care, the current issue. And here's what it says. Researchers from Louisiana State University report a correlation between reduced, meaning low, levels of vitamin D and pre-diabetes and pre-hypertension in men and women. Now, mind you, pre-diabetes exists in 1/4 of disease-free adults in the United States, and 1/3 of all adults have pre-hypertension. All that salt that people are using, not good for you. So if you simply had your 2,000 units of vitamin D3 a day, you could help then prevent going from pre-diabetes to diabetes and pre-hypertension to hypertension. It could save your life. There's another reason why nutrition makes a big difference. And so make sure you're getting that. Also, if you have pets, check your pets once in a while, maybe once every year. Just get a simple blood test done to see about heavy metals. Because when you're feeding your dog or cat out of the cans, they can get a lot of lead. And you're feeding them a lot of the tuna or fish, they can get a lot of mercury. That's going to shorten their lives substantially. Don't feed them out of a can. If you're going to feed them, and you have to feed cats, you can't have a vegetarian cat. I've had vegetarian dogs, by the way. You can feed them wild salmon, fresh, nothing canned. And if you're going to feed your dogs meat, get organic free-range meat, no hormones, no growth-stimulating hormones at all. But it's very, very important when you're feeding your cat and your dog, especially your dog. I always start every day by making the very same juice I make for myself. And I mean, I put everything in it. I won't go through all the nutrients, but I put at least 6 different types of powder in there. I put lots of powdered vitamins and flaxseed oil and coconut oil and probiotics. So it's a real powerful beverage, because I might not be able to have a chance with my schedule now, traveling and filming constantly. That's my day's worth of nutrition, unless I get a thermos and I can take it with me, which sometimes I can, sometimes I can't. So I really load up. I give that in a bowl to my dogs and cats before they get fed. When they've consumed that, then I make sure that they get brown rice and beans and chopped up vegetables and sweet potatoes and yams and turnips and broccoli, fresh fruits. I give them all that. And that's why they're living such long lives. Interesting, when I'm in Europe in particular, I find that dogs and cats are healthy in their mid-20s. Cats into their late 20s, and some into their early 30s. Outliving American dogs and cats by twice. And why? They're not feeding anything out of a box or can. They're giving them scraps fresh right off the table as they're making food for themselves. They feed them and raw eggs, and they don't cook stuff, raw meat. After all, in the wild, animals don't eat anything but raw. And when you take into account water, in the wilds, the vast majority of animals consume a very large amount of very toxic water. It is filled with parasites. And yet they still able to maintain what they would consider normal life. Now you take that same animal and you give them clean water, they can double, even triple their lifespan. There's, you know, in the wilds, a lion will live about 8 to 10 years, maybe hit 12. Very common, 25 years, not in the wilds, in a zoo, for example, or in an animal preserve, where at least you can control the water. Very first thing you're taught as a rancher, and I have a ranch. I've always lived on a farm or a ranch my whole adult life. Keep your water clean and keep your animals going from pasture to pasture. You should never have more than 2 large animals, ideally, for 5 acres. And that way they can go from one side to the other, one side to the other. They keep going back and forth, and as a result, they never get so many parasites. I just don't believe people realize how toxic most water is. You can get parasites out of drinking tap water in New York City. In fact, there was a very well-done presentation that someone sent me, and I've been traveling such long distances, and I haven't had a chance to just watch any of the films that are sent over the internet. But I caught this one about a week ago, and it was a person describing how easy it is to get super infections in hospitals and how you get it when you don't enter with an infection, but you have an infection once you're in there, is that the surface areas, they're not thoroughly cleaned and they're not disinfected. So you go into a hospital room, you think all the surface area has been wiped down and disinfected. It hasn't been. And as a result, you then touch, like the you touch the tabletop, you know, and the bedstand. And now you've got the bacteria and viruses on your fingers. Then they bring in your food and you eat the food. Now it's in your body. That's it. Or you're touching something and you touch your mouth. Now you got it in there. Very easy to get infected. 100,000 people died of infections in hospitals last year. How can you prevent that? Take bleach, put on a mask, take bleach, yourself or family member, and wipe down every single piece of surface area in your room. That is the only thing that can actually kill these resistant germs. And then if you should get a germ, ozone, intravenous ozone, will knock it out. I'm Gary Knoll. Back in a moment, we're going to give some commentary. Ask you to call in and share your points of view. I've chosen not to have a guest today just so we can spend more time sharing a lot more information with you. Please stay with us. Back in a moment. Welcome you. I'm Gary Knoll. Before we go to our calls, let me give two short commentaries. Then I'd like for you to call in and share your thoughts on this. One was from the New York Times, from John Tierney, called A Generation's Vanity, Heard Through Lyrics. And I'll just quote the first two paragraphs. It says, a couple of years ago, as his fellow psychologists debated whether narcissism was increasing, Nathan DeWall heard Rivers Cuomo singing to a familiar 19th century melody. Mr. Cuomo, the lead singer and guitarist for the rock group A Weezer, built the song as variations on a Shaker hymn, where 19th century Shakers had sung, "'Tis the gift to be simple, 'tis the gift to be free." Mr. Cuomo offered his own lyrics. "I'm the meanest in the place. Step up, I'll mess with your face." Instead of the Shaker message of love and humility, Mr. Cuomo sang over and over, "I'm the greatest man that ever lived." The refrain got Dr. DeWall wondering, who would actually sing that out loud? Well, Mr. Cuomo didn't find a problem doing that. And now, after a computer analysis of three decades of hit songs, Dr. DeWall and other psychologists report finding what they were looking for, a statistically significant trend towards narcissism and hostility in popular music. As they hypothesize, the words "I" and "me" appear more frequently, along with anger-related words, while there's been a corresponding decline in "we" and "us" and the expression of positive emotions. Late adolescents and college students love themselves more than ever before, Dr. Wald, psychologist, University of Kentucky, says. His study covered lyrics from 1980 to 2007. So, here's what they are finding. That today's young people care only about themselves, with a few exceptions. They're so much into themselves, they just think that, well, the sun just rises on them, and it's all about them and how they feel and what makes them happy and what they need, and everyone else is really there to accommodate that. And if not, then they get angry. And they have no problem just unleashing this whole torrent of anger at anyone, anything. In lyrics, women have been demeaned and objectified. So at the end of the day, it's just about them. What do you think has allowed this to happen? It's not, is it happening? Yes, it is. Why? That's my question. Why do we have a whole generation now who show up for work and expect to be rewarded, who feel entitled to everything and don't want to work for anything, who've mastered nothing except their egos, who are extraordinarily selfish and disconnected from true intellect, true history, true philosophy, true sense of purpose and meaning, true connection with anything else that's relevant in life, want to be entertained nonstop, and don't want to be in any way bothered? Your thoughts. Our question line is open. It's 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. This commentary is from Tom Englehart. It's a very serious one, a little longer, but I think it's very important. Here's what he says, and this is from tomsdispatch.com. What it feels like when a superpower runs off the tracks. This can't end well, but then how often do empires end well? They live vampirically by feeding off others until sooner or later they begin to feed on themselves. They suck their own blood to hollow themselves out. Sooner or later, they find themselves, as in our case, economically stressed and militarily extended in wars they cannot afford to win or lose. Historians have certainly written about the dangers of overextended empires and of the endless war as a way of life. But there's something distinct and abstract about the patterns of history. It's quite another thing to take it in when you're part of it, when, as they used to say in the overheated 1960s, you're in the belly of the beast. I don't know what it felt like to be inside the Roman Empire in the long decades, even centuries, before it collapsed, or to experience the waning years of the Spanish Empire, or the twilight of the Qing Dynasty, or the Imperial British Empire as the sun first began to set, or even the Soviet Empire before the troops came slinking home from Afghanistan. But at some point it must have seemed at least a little like, truly strange, like watching a machine losing its parts. It must have seemed as odd and unnerving as it does now to see a formerly mighty power enter a state of semi-paralysis at home, even as it staggers on blindly with its war-making abroad. The United States is, of course, an imperial power. However much we might prefer not to utter the word, we still have our globe-spanning array of semi-client states, our military continues to garrison much of the planet, and we are waging war abroad more continuously than at any time in history. Yet, who doesn't sense that the sun is now setting on us? Not so many years ago, we were proud enough of our global strength to regularly refer to ourselves as the Earth's sole superpower. In those years, our president and his top officials dreamed of establishing a worldwide Pax Americana, while making speeches and issuing official documents proclaiming that the United States would be militarily beyond challenge by any and all powers for eons to come. So little time has passed, and yet who speaks like that today, or could? We're a country in need of Prozac. Have you noticed, by the way, how repetitiously our president, various presidential candidates, and others now insist that we are the greatest nation on earth, as they speak of the U.S. military being the finest fighting force in the history of the world? And yet, doesn't that phrase leave ash in your mouth? Look at this country in its frustrations today and tell me, does anyone honestly believe that anymore? It wasn't a mistake that the fantasy Avenger figure of Rambo became immensely popular in the wake of defeat in Vietnam, or that unlike American heroes of earlier decades, he had such a visibly almost overblown musculature. As eye candy, it was pure overcompensation for the obvious. Similarly, when the United States was actually the greatest on this planet, no one need to say it over and over again. Can there be any question that something big has happened here, even if we don't quite know what it is? Why? Because unlike the peoples of past empires, we never took pride in or even were able to think of ourselves as imperial. And if we were indeed in denial that you lived in the belly of a great imperial power, if, like most Americans, you managed to ignore the fact that we were pouring our treasury into the military or setting up bases in countries that few could have found on a map, then you could naturally experience the empire going down as if through a glass darkly. Nevertheless, the feelings that should accompany the experience of an imperial power running out of power and off the rails aren't likely to disappear just because analysis is lacking. Disillusionment, depression, and dismay flow even more strongly through the American bloodstream. Just look at any polling data on whether this country, once the quintessential land of optimists, is heading in the right direction or the wrong track, and you'll find that the wrong track numbers are staggering and growing by the month. On the rare occasions when Americans have been asked by pollsters whether they think the country is in decline, the figures have been similarly over the top. It's not hard to see why. A loss of faith in the American political system is palpable. For Americans, most Americans, it's no longer our government, but bureaucracy. Washington is visibly in gridlock and incapable of doing much of significance, while state governments facing the steepest decline in state tax receipts on record are, along with local governments, staggering under massive deficits and cutting back in areas, education, policing, firefighting, that matter to daily life. years ago in the George Bush era, I wanted to put a new word in our domestic political vocabulary. Republicans, it was my way of expressing the feeling that something basic in this country, a can-do spirit, was seeping away. I failed, of course, and since then, that can't-do spirit has visibly spread far beyond the Republican Party. Simply put, we're a country need a Prozac. Facing the challenges of a world at the edge, from Japan to the greater Middle East, from a shaky global economic system to weather that has become anything but entertainment, the United States looks increasingly incapable of coping. It no longer invests in its young, or plans effectively for the future, or sets off on new paths. It literally can't do anything right. And this is not just a domestic crisis, but part of imperial decline. In conclusion, we just don't treat it as such, tending instead to deal with the foreign and domestic as essentially separate spheres when the connections between them are so obvious. If you doubt this, just pull into your nearest gas station and fill up the tank. Of course, it doesn't. Who doesn't know that this country, once such a generator of wealth, is now living with unemployment figures not seen since the Great Depression, as well as unheard-of levels of debt, that it's hooked on foreign energy, and like most addicts, has next to no capacity for planning how to get off that drug, or that it's living through the worst period of income inequality in modern history? And who doesn't know that a crew of financial corporate honchos and lobbyists and politicians have been fattening themselves off the faltering body politic? Your thoughts on that? About America in decline. Bill O'Reilly and others want to see Wikipedia eliminated, want to see Julian Assange, its leader, who brings us the truth in official cables, put in prison. He doesn't want the truth out. He still believes that everything we do is right. It's just amazing how popular these people are. And it tells us a lot about the people who listen and watch these individuals rather than the hosts themselves. We don't seem to have people capable of just being honest about the problem and the solutions. Your thoughts, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. Back in a moment with your comments, and we're going in studio in New York City. Please stay with us. Say hello to Christian in New Hyde Park. Hi, Christian.
Yeah, Gary. Pleasure. Pleasure.
Thank you.
All right. It's good that you're bringing up this topic of the ego here, because I've been seeing it all over the place. I'm only 27 years young, and I've been fortunate enough to have spent the last 2 years especially, but the last 5 or 6 years traveling, being a ski bum, and just sort of living and embracing my freedom, and that's been my secondary education. It's been quite a priceless education, and the funny thing is I haven't paid anything for it. I've been living about $8,000 to $12,000 a year, and I've lived in Oregon, California, Colorado, originally from New York, and just back visiting my parents right now. But the one thing I've come to understand is this ego versus the spirit. As we have duality now in this day and age, we've got dark and light, good and bad, fat, skinny. There's all these opposites, and they can only exist with each other before we find some way to transcend this and go beyond it. So a lot of people seem to be wrapped up in their ego, thinking that this external world, this material world, is what matters. So they try and present this image of themselves, whether it's driving a big car or carrying the designer handbag, so that they can say, hey, this is me, this is who I am, this defines me, and therefore they label themselves and therefore impose a limit on themselves. Even when I tried, you know, getting into vegetarianism, it was, oh, now I'm a vegetarian, so I'm different than the meat eaters. It becomes an us versus them thing. Then I was taught that to not impose labels, because that then limits us, and we are truly limitless creatures. And this is one of the most amazing things that has been shared with me, is that we have capabilities beyond our wildest imagination. In fact, that's why I think our imagination is capable of so much, because it's there to tell us that anything you can think, you can do. Now this goes back to a lot of ancient knowledge, which has been intriguing me for the past few years, I would say, because I've been simplifying my life. So I stopped paying rent about 4 years ago, and I moved all my stuff into a nice Chevy van and started to travel around in the van, doing the winter thing, snowboarding in the winter, surfing in the summertime, traveling around, couch surfing, save money, staying in communities and on organic farms, trading my work for shelter and food. And it really brought it back to a simple way of life, which life was before we had infrastructure and all these jobs to be done and paychecks to be signed and money to be made. And it really intrigued me, because before there was all of this, what did we have? We only had each other, and each person was the resource. And the land, of course, the land and Mother Earth and Father Sky, these were the biggest resources of all. So it helped me, by simplifying my life, to get more in touch with this and realize my connection to the earth and the entire universe. Because we're all, I believe that we're all just a one little part of this whole entire thing.
Let's just back it up a moment here. You've made a lot of very important points, I believe, and you've articulated yourself well, and I thank you for that. I would imagine that many people, if they had a chance to do it over again, would love to have the freedom that you've created for yourself in order to get what you consider and what many of us would consider the more important education, how to relate with the world and people in it in a way that is both constructive and nonviolent and positive, and that the real joy of each day is what you can create and what you can share with others. It was... Who was it? It was George Bernard Shaw, a great writer in England, who was a vegan, by the way, and lived a long life. And he said, we have no more right to consume happiness without producing it than we do to consume wealth without producing it. And the meaning of that is that we assume that if we show up someplace that's a spiritual place, that we should immediately become infected with that spiritual energy, or that if we show up at a retreat, let's say in Sedona, where there are people doing meditation, or people now listening right to the show in Sedona today, and it's a beautiful environment, and there's some beautiful people there, nice in their spirit, but think of the people who don't want to contribute to it but want to take something from it. So first you have to put yourself in a mindset, when I go to an environment, can I raise the bar in my own life to make that environment better because I was there? Can I leave that environment without anyone saying that the environment is less because I was there? That is an art that young people must try to understand, that the young people the 60s did, and because we also did the communes and we did the organic farms and people traveled throughout the country and then became a part of the problem, not the solution any longer. Your generation has a capacity to learn, relearn the lessons of humility through humanity, meaning giving and sharing and nurturing without the whole idea being, what's in it for me, dude? And that's what I hear you saying, that you are willing to participate in life at a more spiritual level and allow your sense of wonderment to grow because of that. That's the message I'm getting from you. And I appreciate you sharing that with us. Thank you very much. And you're not going to be alone. There's going to be an awful lot of people in this audience when they hear what I'm going to be telling them tomorrow about what's coming at us from the sun and how it's going to affect our cities. Really bad news. And nothing anybody can do about it. Nothing. Except you get off the grid. For those who are off the grid, gee whiz, it's going to make a difference. And why do people go to work every day? Why do people work themselves into exhaustion? Why do people work themselves so they're so stressed that they then cause that stress to disrupt the quality of their relationships and quality time? Because they want something. They equate success with standard of living. And I believe that you've learned an important lesson. Equate success of living with quality of life. Quality of life is a different set of selection and criteria than standard of living. Standard of living, you got to keep making more. You keep having to work harder. You have to keep going at it every single day. Quality of life, you don't. There's no gun that just went off and you have to get into a race. You don't have to be any place the rest of your life, even at 27. Thanks for listening. I appreciate your input. That was Christian. Now let's say hello to Mark from New Jersey. Hi, Mark. You're on the air.
Hi, Gary. How you doing?
Doing great.
I just have a couple of comments. I disagree with that psychological study. I don't think the kids today are narcissistic. I think they're selfish. But if you scratch the surface, I think you'd find most of them are very, very insecure. And it's because, you know, they really are not being schooled well. They don't have many skills. And you know, they're being inundated with internet and all this other stuff, which is, you know, I. And, you know, I think there's a lot of insecurity there. And as far as political issues and this and that, I think most people don't know who really runs this country, and it's the central bank, the Fed. And you know, their goals of a one-world government and all the wars they start and everything else, along with the other central banks, the Bank of England, et cetera, et cetera.
Let's take the power
behind the throne.
All right, let's take your points. You've made several very valid points, and I thank you for calling and doing that. Wasn't it Benjamin Franklin who said, "Praise to the undeserving is severe satire"? Young people today are insecure because they have not been included in any of the essential processes of their own lives. They either have so little discipline and so much micromanagement and so much praise where it is not deserved that they do not have a complete sense of who they are, only what they can think and what they can consume in the environment which they exist. And as a result, there's this sense of incompleteness that leads to creating a sense of entitlement, which then manifests itself frequently as egotism. So egotism frequently comes from insecurity. Now, to your other point, I absolutely agree that our educational system has failed us. And this is from Christine D'Amico, a school teacher from Brooklyn. And she wrote this after my a recent commentary I did. She said, quote, "This is such a crime," and what she's referring to is how school teachers are the number one determinators in who gets labeled ADD and ADHD and gets on drugs. The psychologist or psychiatrist has to give the actual prescriptions, but it's the school teachers, unfortunately, who are the ones who make that decision to send the kid over. Quote, "This is such a crime. Teachers are going about telling parents they need to put their kids on meds. I've heard it, and of course I speak my mind. I've been asked by social workers whether or not I think a kid should be put on meds. I always say no. I'd rather suffer in the classroom with kids that are very difficult than put them on drugs. There are teachers who can't control classes, and they are not trained in good discipline in classrooms, so they want kids on drugs. It's the boys, for the most part, who are not able to sit, obviously because they have totally different hormones, even at a young age, running around. And boys need to run and play and get out their energy. Many schools have replaced test prep classes with phys ed. There's no phys ed in my school. No place to run, no place to play. These boys are stuck. You can clearly see that the girls, for the most part, are easier to manage in the classroom. Then there's the class sizes that are sometimes too big, and most importantly, the teaching methods require the boys to sit still and write and sit again and write, and there's absolutely nothing to keep their attention. However, I've seen and see it all the time that with the use of music and movement, my boys are more attentive. They are singing and dancing and learning. They get their bodies involved, and of course, music is an incredible avenue to the brain. You access the right brain from the left brain activity, that brain starts to grow. The good news is that with well-trained teachers who use multisensory learning and incorporate lots of movement into their learning, they see problems disappear. Right now I'm teaching 9 special ed boys. One boy was on meds, but his mom took him off because he was falling asleep. And now we've cleaned up his diet, and he is fine. So that's just one person's comments. I'm not going to take any more right now, but I want to give, we are going to studio in just a second. We have a special for you. I was just told here it is. We know that it's the nice time of the year coming ahead of us, beautiful warm weather. Many of you are going to go to the beach, swimming, and lake, connecting with nature, traveling, socializing with family and friends. All that's good. Eating in different places. Going outdoors to concerts. These are all the wonderful things we can do in the spring and summer. However, please be aware that all these wonderful activities can also potentially create a problem, and that is dangerous pathogens you encounter. Swim in a lake or even at the ocean, lie in the sand or in the grass, eat at different restaurants or people's homes, shake people's hands, kiss hello, goodbye, congratulate among friends at a concert. And lo and behold, you could end up with bugs in your body. Here is the product. It is called Bug Out. And this is one of my most popular products I've ever created. It's my own proprietary blend of green black walnut hulls, western wormwood, clove flower, queasy chips, mullein leaf, fennel, cascara sagradata aged bark, pumpkin seed, garlic bulbs, cramp bark, capsicum fruit, thyme, sweet Annie herb, cinchona bark, golden seal root, elecampane root, peppermint oil, cinnamon oil, and oregano oil. And you take 20 drops under the tongue on an empty stomach in the morning. Tastes great, too. It's vegan, it's kosher, it's delicious, and it's called Bug Out. I have it with me all the time. So, now, buy one, you get one free. Also, and this is important, we have been out of my Advanced Supremacy capsules for months. Well, today we got them back in. So now we're going to give a special because we just got them back in, the Advanced Supremacy. This is the special vitamin C I make. It's buffered. I combine bioflavonoids for enhanced utilization. This is the superstar vitamin C. You're getting ascorbyl palmitate and calcium ascorbate and potassium ascorbate, magnesium ascorbate, and selenium is ascorbate. You're getting cranberries and blueberries, bioflavonoids, acerola berries, and amala fruit, all in this single vegan capsule. So the Advanced Supremacy capsules back in stock for the first time in 4 months. You buy one, you get one free. So Bug Out is on sale. Advanced Supremacy is on sale. You can get either or both. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. They're back in stock. Now, let's go into our studio in New York City where we have standing by Elizabeth. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hello, Gary. Hi. I'm really enjoying the show so far. I wanted to say that we have an article here that's come in. It's by Michelle Chen, and it's called, the headline actually is The Growing Food Crisis and What World Leaders Aren't Doing About It. Would it be possible for you to expand on this? I believe you may know the article.
What's happening is this, that throughout the Middle East, for example, just take one country, in Tunisia, they're running out of water. It is estimated that the country will be out of water within the next 10 years completely. I mean, just dry as a bone. What are you going to do with 30 million people? Also, Saudi Arabia is running out of water. Long ago, they decided that they needed to grow their own wheat, so they went down into the deep aquifers and they started using the water. Now their water's gone, so they're buying farmlands in the Sudan and Ethiopia in order to grow food because they are not going to grow their own food. So all over the Middle East and all over different parts of the world, they haven't paid attention to sustainability. And even in China, of the 671 major cities, over 60% are water scarce, meaning they don't have enough water for their population. Without water, you can't grow food. So what do? Well, they do what we're doing in the United States. They invested, instead of food for people, biofuels, because it was profitable. So they grew corn or sugar beets or whatever they needed to grow, or soy, in order to turn that into biofuel. A disaster. A terrible choice. So now we have more people who are food scarce, over a billion, one-sixth of the world's population, and we're running out of water. So we have a double negative. Misuse of land, not a scarcity of food. If we simply grew food for humans, we would have enough food that we could grow in the world that no human being should go hungry. But instead, we're using the land for food for humans instead for biofuels, which is a complete economic fraud. And it's also an ecological fraud because it costs more, even with the subsidies, to create a fuel that you could use in your car from biofuels than other types of fuel. So, and then we're running out of water. Tomorrow I'm going to deal with how much water we're running out of in the United States, and which states are simply going to be out of water. I'm talking about 90% of the water gone, and there's no way in the world to be able to support the people in Los Angeles and other major cities. In Phoenix and Tucson, we have some major water crisis, not in the far future. I'm talking about right now. So now in the Middle East, they're way past tipping. They're running out of food, and they're running out of water in which to irrigate land to grow food. So now you're going to start seeing social unrest. The social unrest that you have seen since January in 22 out of 22 of the Arab League states will pale by comparison because people were hungry but not starving to death. Now they will be starving to death. And when people start to starve to death, then you have no control. And then those countries will see major riots, and unlike anything we've seen in the past. And I predict this will start within the next 2 years, and within the next 5 years, you'll have food riots in the United States. You'll have major food riots. You'll have food riots all over the world. You'll have water shortages. Do you know that of all the water on the planet, only 0.7% is actually clean drinking water, or water to use in any form of actual human endeavor? That means that 99.3% of the water we can't use, and we've misused what we have. That's what's going to be happening, and it's not, is it going to happen? It's just when. Okay?
Thank you.
Let's say hello to Sally Bernard, the co-founder and president of Safe Minds, and we're going to talk to her briefly about something that just came up. For a long time now, anyone who suggested there was a connection between the vaccines that contain thimerosal, mercury, and autism was said, no, we've done this study through the CDC. It shows that by a Dr. Thorsen from Denmark, and that is not the issue. Well, we beg to differ. We believe that it is the issue. Guess what? Where all the media chose not to do their homework, but trust the CDC and the World Health Organization and the FDA and Thorsen, guess what's happened? Let's go over and say hello to my guest, Sally. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. Tell us about the newest information of why, finally, the truth can come out that they lied, they covered it up, And now the guy who was a part of that whole situation, that whole fraud, has been indicted. Take it from there.
Yes, well, the researcher's name is Paul Thorsen. He's from Denmark, and he worked for several years for the CDC in the late 90s and early 2000s. And he and his colleagues in Denmark put out several papers using the Danish registry to refute a link between vaccines and autism. And now he has just been indicted by the U.S. government for fraud and money laundering related to research funding from the CDC.
Okay, but explain what this means as far as a person who now is under indictment and his work is being challenged, and yet it was his work that supported, oh, there's no connection between vaccinations, dimerosal, and autism.
Yes, well, it's these are, you know, the indictment raises serious questions about the integrity of this research, because he was given $11 million by our government, the CDC, to conduct these studies, and at least, according to the indictment, at least $1 million of that money went to his personal account. And so what we ask is, well, did he not do the research he said he did, and then he made it up because he didn't spend the money on the research? And why was he given this contract, this huge contract, without a lot of oversight of how the money was spent? And this is just surfacing now and in the last couple of years. And so if you have someone who's committing that degree of fraud, according to the indictment, what does that say about the quality of his research and the CDC's oversight of that research?
Well, I think at the very least it should throw into question anything that he has to say. After all, he was the one who was very outspoken in telling the world there's no connection. And yet this is at the same time that we have absolute proof from other scientists doing real detailed analysis that, yes, there were problems of brain inflammation with vaccines and with different ingredients in the vaccines, and they have not done their own homework. So the scholarship clearly shows that they were wrong, that the combination of vaccines, especially in immature immune systems of children and babies, does adversely affect their body, whether it's aluminum, formaldehyde, polysorbate additives, squalene, or thimerosal. So they've been covering this up for a long time, and he was one of their champion spokespersons. Everyone would refer to him. Well, now he's under indictment.
Yes, it's, you know, the proponents, you know, of the vaccine program who, you know, speak out to absolve vaccinations and the components of vaccines from any link to autism, the increase in autism that we're witnessing in this country. They rely on a set of studies, really epidemiology studies, to disprove a link. And Thorsen and his colleagues in Denmark were the authors of several of these core studies. And so the epidemiology, which is now suspect, is counterbalanced by, like you said, the real lab work where they're looking at kids, they're looking at animal studies and cell studies, and all of those are showing that these ingredients are toxic, particularly to developing infants. And so we've got a conflict in the data and the research literature, epidemiology on one side, the real lab work on the other side. And so now the, you know, some of these core epidemiology studies, we have to question those even more than before because of the questions about the integrity of the authors.
Sally, thank you very much. Sally Bernard, and the good work your group is doing. And we will be bringing you in the next few weeks some brand new, original, in-depth investigative reporting pieces on the politics and bad science behind vaccination.
Great. Thank you so much.
I'm Gary Noll. We're out of time. Remember, tonight, 6 hours, if you're on the East Coast, I'm on our sister station, KPFK, and look forward to actually hopefully being live in their studio out there in L.A. today. So if you're on the East Coast, tune in at 3 a.m. You can go to GaryNoll.com or ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, and that'll take you there. And otherwise, if you're on the West Coast, midnight to 6. Have a nice day, everyone.
Show is produced in our New York City studio. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matt Bogart. All shows are archived by Joe Kemp. The chief archivist is Sharon Pride, and the program director is Jason Taubenfeld.